Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, and it's Friday, but it's and very often Congressman Pocan is with us on Wednesday, but Friday's just as good, and it's midday, so it's midday with Mark. Congressman Mark Pocan on the line with us, representing the 2nd District of Wisconsin. Of course, he's the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. You know, one of the top two progressives in Congress here and in that caucus. And Pocan.house.gov is the website. You can tweet him at Rep, R-E-P, Mark Pocan. He will be with us for the hour taking your calls. So if you have a question for Congressman Pocan, give him a shout now. Congressman, welcome back.
Thank you, Tom. Really glad to be here today.
Great to have you with us. I'm broadcasting live from Portland, Oregon. Where are you today?
I'm in Madison, Wisconsin, but if I can, I couldn't be on Wednesday. I want to apologize because I was in Western Massachusetts. I did a town hall with Jim McGovern in Northampton on Tuesday night. Hundreds of people showed up, and I got to tell you, Tom, you have a lot of listeners in Western Massachusetts. People brought it up over and over as we had conversations throughout the evening.
Oh, that's great to know. That's great. So there's a lot going on in Congress right now, or a lot going on in general, I'm just really curious to hear your thoughts on. Kim Jong-un calling Donald Trump basically a dotard, I think is the word. It's kind of an anachronistic English word, but, you know, means basically senile old man. And but he explicitly threatened fire against the United States. Trump is threatening to destroy North Korea. You've got Jimmy Carter coming out and saying this is crazy. If I were president, I would fly over to North Korea and meet with this guy and let's work this thing out. All he wants us to say is that we're not going to attack him unless he attacks us first, that this is all purely defensive on both sides. I'm curious your thoughts on that. I'm curious your thoughts on what's going on with this so-called, Graham Cassidy, Johnson, whatever bill, this so-called repeal of Obamacare. It looks like it's going to be insanely destructive. And I've had a number of people call into this program over the days that we've been talking about it, saying that they have not been having problems getting through to their Republican members of the Senate, and which was not the case previously. They were slammed, but they're apparently not right now. And I'm thinking maybe this has to do with crappy coverage on the part of our media or something. But how real is this? What are your thoughts on that? And what else is going on?
Yeah. So let me start with the health care bill, because I think it is very much a real proposal. I think they were doing this stealthily and planning this for a while. It's their last attempt It's this Graham Cassidy Heller Johnson bill, which essentially gets rid of the Affordable Care Act, but doesn't provide a replacement. I mean, it's going to block grant money to states, but only until 2026, and then there's a cliff, and then there's nothing. It cuts Medicaid. It allows states to do things like get rid of things like requirements to cover people with pre-existing conditions and the other essential health benefits. And you're going to see people, if you have a heart condition, your insurance will likely go up $50,000 a year under this proposal. I think it's been estimated that one in two people might be living in states where they'll have these weakened provisions. And a place like Wisconsin with Scott Walker, you know, I think he was, if not the first, one of the first governors in the country previously to say he would consider getting rid of pre-existing conditions as a requirement. And then he kind of realized that was a pretty bad, dumb thing to say, and he tried to then give a non-answer. Well, this is real. This is going to the Senate. It has to be done by September 30th in order to avoid the 60-vote rule, to use this reconciliation process to get 50 votes. And then it could go to the House, and it could be law by this time potentially next week. So what I agree. I've tried to Google this to even find out what this is about, because they're not waiting for a Congressional Budget Office score, which is pretty much unheard of on something this big. And it's hard to even find stories because it's complicated. I had a press conference yesterday here, and one reporter wrote the story up, and they referred to, instead of that we are going to have block grants going to states, they said that he was blocking grants going to states. And they said $32 million could be lost. No, it's 32 million people could lose their coverage, but we don't know because they're not going to wait for a CBO score. So I'm really worried that this was a plan for quite a while and that they're now executing their plan to take away health insurance.
I'm continually confounded by the arcane rules in the Senate. And I remember, you know, Bernie was doing this show when he had been in the House for years, and when he moved over to the Senate, the first year or so that he was on, people would call with Senate rules questions, and he would say, you know, I'm still trying to figure this stuff out. It's apparently quite different from the rules that you guys have in the House. But I thought, and apparently I'm completely wrong on this, I thought that if you're going to pass a piece of legislation using reconciliation, that the Byrd Amendment rules for reconciliation, use of reconciliation, require that you demonstrate that you're not going to raise the budget deficit after a decade or within a decade or both. And I thought that that required a CBO score. Are they getting around this by saying at the end of 10 years, everything goes to zero? So obviously it's not going to add to the deficit. We're just going to end Medicaid. Is that what's going on? Or are they going to slip in a CBO score after it goes through reconciliation with the House or what?
You know, your guess is as good as mine, Tom. That's the problem with this. The fact that they're not going to do a CBO score, that's pretty much unheard of, right? So we don't really know what we're voting on. Senator Johnson from Wisconsin was on Morning Joe earlier this week, and when they asked him questions, it was very clear he doesn't know what's in his bill, or he doesn't want people to know what's in his bill. Either way, I find it problematic that he's either ignorant of the bill or deceitful about the bill. But this is the process they're going on because they're so desperate to get this done, because they still need to get this done so they can move on to tax reform. And, you know, I think people need to really be calling and, you know, going to rallies and doing whatever on this. I think this is really real. I think it was very strategically held quiet. I think they had this bipartisan compromise with Lamar Alexander and Patty Murray going on, and all of a sudden it stopped. And when this started, I think this might have been a plan for quite a while, and that means they've got a little advantage on their side. We need to get ready and speak out really hard.
Yeah, absolutely. It's time to be calling Congress. We just have about a minute and a half before we're going to hit a break here, Congressman. What else is going on in Congress that people should be A, aware of, or B, calling the members of Congress and you know, citizen lobbying on?
Sure. I think two things, if I can mention. One, DACA still. I think we need to, you know, October 5th is the new date again for signing in up for the program. We need to make sure that we're getting this done by October 5th. So Democrats are very, very invested in getting this done. And then second one that doesn't get a lot of coverage, but, you know, Perkins student loans expires on September 30th, and it might, you know, continue for a while without resolution. But, you know, there's a bipartisan bill I'm working on right now with Representative Stefanik from New York. We have over 200 co-sponsors in the House. But, you know, if this doesn't happen, a lot of people are going to lose access to financial aid that otherwise, you know, may not be able to go to college without it. I'm one of those people. That's why I watch these issues really close. If it wasn't for grants and loans, I never could have gone to college. I worked throughout. I never did a spring break. I get really nervous about programs like this. So Perkins Loans is another thing that hasn't gotten attention, but we need to be calling our members of Congress on.
Is that a program that requires that requires congressional reauthorization for funding? Is that what it is, or even the entire program itself?
Yeah, it's the reauthorization because we 2 years ago we did a reauthorization and Lamar Alexander held it up in the Senate for a few months, and we lost the ability to give loans to grad students. So we still have it for undergrad students, but you know, if they keep at the pace they've been going, this is a program that could go away, and it's extremely important to anyone who's smart enough and capable enough to go to higher education but can't afford it. We need to keep this program in place.
Yeah, remarkable. Congressman Mark Pocan, Midday with Mark, taking your calls right after this. And welcome back. Horace in High Point, North Carolina, you are on the air. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. You're on the air with Congressman Mark Pocan.
I have two things to say. I don't know if this is correct or not, but I think that the Democrats can get on the floor and speak for a certain amount of hours and to prolong it until the time runs out. And also, if they're trying to promote a bill this egregious, why aren't they taking the same health care that they're trying to offer to the majority of the people? Thank you for listening to my comment.
Yeah, thank you, Horace. So on the first question, I'm going to give, I think, Bernie's old answer. I'm not entirely familiar with all the rules of the Senate and whether or not there is an ability to. I haven't seen much of that in the news, and I think that would have been mentioned if it was a possibility, but I'm sorry I can't answer that. To the second question, you know, currently, and a lot of people don't know this, the only people required by law to have coverage under the Affordable Care Act are members of Congress. So we're all in that plan, which is a really good plan, and I'm very happy about the coverage I have. For them, let's remember, over half of Congress are millionaires. The typical cost of what health insurance might be isn't going to mean as much to many of them. So I think they look at it differently. And since so many people really don't represent their constituents, they represent the special interests far more effectively. That's what they're doing in this case. And, you know, we saw the Koch brothers supposedly recently. There's some comments that it sounds like they are really trying to push this and make sure it gets done. That's the people that they're dancing to their tune rather than their actual constituents. So I think the question I would have, Horace, is if this is such a great idea, where is their press conferences nationally with patients and doctors and hospital professionals all saying this is a great way to expand and cover people in America? No one can do that. It's the complete opposite, and that should tell you how bad their bill is.
Yeah, yesterday, we have about a minute and 15 seconds before the break here. Yesterday, I on this program, I read the list of physicians' agencies that are opposed to this. The American Hospital Association, I don't recall if it was the AMA specifically, I think it was the AMA Action Fund, AARP. I mean, I don't know of any group that's not a, you know, right-wing ideologue group. We had a guy on yesterday who was one of these, you know, right-wing alternatives for the AARP kind of groups. But it's really not a AARP group. It's just really right-wing propaganda aimed at people over 50. Do you know of any actual rational, or not rational, legitimate medical groups that are supportive of Graham Cassidy?
No, exactly. I don't. In fact, even insurance companies are against this because they see what's going to happen. You go back to the bad old days, and that didn't work especially well for them either. So this is a complete solution without anyone actually proposing it who works in the industry. This is just the Republicans to get rid of Obamacare and to start tax reform for their wealthy benefactors.
Yeah, and the tax reform aspect of this is not being discussed in the media at all. I mean, before it was like, yeah, we're going to give a giant tax break to the billionaires. It's the reporting on this is so different. It's really quite stark. It's quite remarkable. Congressman Mark Pocan taking your calls here on the Tom Hartman program. Stick around. We'll be right back. It's Midday with Mark. It's our hour-long program here where Congressman Mark Pocan is taking your calls. And Greg in Manitowoc, Wisconsin. Am I saying it right, Greg?
Yes, Manitowoc.
You're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Yes, I had a question about the Foxconn deal. Where are Republicans getting these numbers on the number of workers that this place is supposed to employ?
Yeah, so, Greg, so if I can, Tom, you know, this is something I can, it's got national news because it's the largest subsidy, I think, ever in any state to a multinational corporation to incentive. This is a $3 billion, billion with a B, subsidy to a multinational corporation that has been saying they're going to produce 3,000 jobs and aspirationally up to 13,000 jobs. So, Greg, what you're pointing out is one of my pet peeves is Scott Walker keeps getting away with saying 13,000 jobs, and he's doing the math dividing by what that costs per job, and he's talking about everything else, and the media has been saying up to 13,000 jobs. But the reality is the CEO of Foxconn is saying 3,000 jobs, and I think by the time this actually happens, it could be less than that because I think they'll be putting in more robot technology and other things, and it's going to be the biggest boondoggle we've seen in any state. And I guarantee up in Manitowoc, no one is going to see a dime of benefit from what's happening with something on the state line border with Illinois, where many of those people are going to be working there and living in Illinois, and maybe a few people in the immediate area will see a benefit, but they're not going to see it in Manitowoc or Green Bay or Superior or Madison or a whole lot of other places.
Remarkable. Bill, in Midlothian, Virginia, you're on the air with Congressman Mark Pocan.
Oh, yes, sir. Thank you all both for taking my call. What I called to ask about, there was an editorial today in the Richmond newspaper that's actually ironically owned by Warren Buffett, and it brought up some points and counterpoints on both sides of this issue about the health care, and I just want to see if I can get an opinion on it one way or the other. The overall tone of the conversation was both parties need to get the cost curve down. On the medical side of the thing, on the doctor, hospital, et cetera side, because if that doesn't happen, it's not going to make a difference what kind of plan you go into unless you can set prices. But the point they brought up that intrigued me, and this is what I want to ask, the insurance companies are upset about or talking about this plan, but State Corporation Commission in Virginia said the reason they are is because of these block grants. They're concerned that money that goes to the big states, i.e. California, New York, that they could take this money and they could finally finance their own single-payer plan. You know, it's not because they're nice guys, because I haven't heard anybody say the insurance industry were nice guys. Is that a valid point, the way this money goes out?
I mean, potentially it's up to each state to how they would cover it. The problem is they're going to be having less money to use, especially in some of those bigger states, than they currently have for health care. So right off the bat, there's going to be a crunch created because it's less dollars going out by the way they're doing the block grants. But secondly, I just want to go to your earlier point. You know, when it comes to holding that cost curve down, that's what the Affordable Care Act did. And until the last year when there was a little bit of a spike after many years of holding those costs flat, you know, a lot of that was due to prescription drug prices. And that's something that many of us are still trying to go after those companies. They've been, in many ways, some companies extremely parasitic in how they operate their so-called business model. I agree that there's things that we should be able to do to address the cost curve, but that and that alone is not going to be at all comparable to if you don't have insurance or if because you have a pre-existing condition, a heart problem, like the 5-year-old child who was doing a press conference with me yesterday, if suddenly it's $50,000 more in order to be covered, they're likely not going to be covered, and that's going to affect them negatively, and then you're going to have somehow someone's still going to have to pay for the cost. It's not like he's not going to have heart surgery, and I think that's why you see some of these other people opposing this plan.
Congressman, one of the big pieces of that cost curve is pharmaceuticals. And Medicare Part D, as negotiated by Billy Towson and his Republican buddies, makes it illegal for the federal government to negotiate drug prices with the pharmaceutical companies. So we're all paying through Medicare you know, full retail price for drugs, which is obscene. And you know, and plus there's the importation of drugs. Most of the drugs people take are not even made in the United States, but it's illegal to import them from a pharmacy in Canada, which is crazy. Are you hearing any talk about changing either one of those policies?
So the only thing I have heard when the director of the FDA became before my subcommittee on appropriations, he was pretty and said some positive things around generic drugs and trying to get more things produced when they're eligible to be generic quicker. But a lot of these issues, you know, the pharmaceutical lobby is so unbelievably prominent in Washington. It's going to be hard to see that happen. I mean, you know, I look at just was it 2 weeks ago, a new drug, a promising drug on childhood leukemia came out, $476,000 a dose, and they did it with NIH research dollars.
When was the last time you looked forward to sitting at your desk all day? Since getting my new X chair, not only am I enjoying the time spent at my desk much more than ever, but I can't believe how much more productive I've been. My X chair is unbelievably stylish, and thanks to all the ways you can personalize it, it literally molds itself to my body. Trust me, this is not your grandfather's office chair. And because I don't need to keep having to take breaks or to stretch my back, I'm getting more done in the day than ever before. If you spend a lot of time in your office chair every day, then you need to try the X chair. In fact, here's a terrific deal just for you, just for my listeners. The makers of X-Chair want you to feel the X-Chair difference for yourself. So if you go to xchairtom.com right now, that's the letter xchairtom, T-H-O-M.com, not only will they knock $100 off the price, they'll even throw a free foot rest if you use the promo code Tom. Just go to xchairtom.com right now, xchairtom.com. I love my X-Chair and you will too, so check out xchairtom.com right now. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. And on the line with us is Congressman Mark Pocan. It's midday with Mark. Congressman Pocan, the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus representing the 2nd District of Wisconsin. Pocan, P-O-C-A-N.house.gov. You can tweet him at Rep. Mark Pocan. And Margie in Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin, you are on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Good morning. My understanding is the S-CHIP program runs out at the end of this month. What is being
done? This is the Children's Health Insurance Program.
The Medicaid for children? What is?
No, I was just clarifying for people who didn't know what S-CHIP, yeah. Go ahead.
What is being done to ensure that this program continues?
Yeah, Margie, thanks for calling in from Wisconsin. I do know the Senate, there was, I thought, a deal that they had come around to on this that should be coming before us next week. However, with all the other healthcare stuff, I'm a little concerned what else they might use as bargaining chips, because already they're trying to do whatever they can to get the additional votes they need for Graham, Cassidy, Heller, Johnson bill, although really we should just call it Trump Care because it's the newest version of Trump Care, the president supporting it. So I do think that as of right now, it's in decent shape as far as what I heard coming out of the Senate. But again, I would watch it very closely through this next week given what's moving on health care.
David, in Loves Park, Illinois, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Yeah, hello. Hold on. Let me get you off a speakerphone. Apologize. Hi, Tom and Congressman. I am calling to say thank you for taking over where Bernie was not able to anymore. I think it's great. I wanted to just say that because of you, Tom, and Bernie, and now even you, Congressman Pocan, I've decided I'm running for the state representative district of 68 here in the state of Illinois.
Oh, that's great, David. I'll tell you, when I was in Massachusetts and when I've gone to Barbara Lee's district in California and across the country, I got to tell you what you're saying about Tom's program, I hear over and over. You know, a lot of people, this is a way to connect people so they know what's moving through Congress, what to be moving on, to make sure we're responding to be effective. And, I'm glad that we have this ability to have the conversation weekly, and I do everything I can to make it happen, even if we have to move it a day. It's very, very important. And congratulations on running for office. You know, this is one of the things we're finding a lot of people are running for office right now, and there's going to be a lot of primaries, I think, in all these offices as well, because there's a lot of interest, and that's perfect, right? We need a representative democracy. We need people who really represent average people running for office, which all too often doesn't happen. So congratulations on that, and again, just from my travels around the country, Tom, people love having this sort of a venue.
That's great. Thank you. David, just real quickly, do you have a website you want to plug?
Well, yes. I'm just going to go with that. It's www.sol, S-O-L-L, and then the number 4, and then all.com. So sol4all.com. If there's anyone from Justice Democrats listening, I could certainly use their help too.
Okay. David, thanks a lot for the call. Jim in San Diego, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan. Jim? Okay, let's try Paul in Detroit, Michigan. Paul, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hi. Hello, Congressman and Tom. Congressman, this question is not really driven on policy. It's just your coping techniques. Tom does a very good job on his shows pointing out that sometimes facts are stated by members of the other side, which, first glance seem reasonable, and then you realize how much deception is involved. I was just wondering, what are your coping mechanisms, either public or personal, when you're confronted with really blatant dishonesty, as I personally seem to be hearing it more and more nowadays, and they're not even subtle about it. And I know that Congress does have decorum rules on not calling anyone out in public, but it just seems to me that you probably face this on a regular basis, and I'm just curious, how do you deal with it?
You know, Paul, that's a very interesting question, and I got to admit, this year, I've been doing this for 23 years. I was in local government, state government for 14 years, and now my third term in Congress. And, I know you're going to have disagreements with people, and you try to bring them on board on your thoughts. You try to unite people around values. And since 2010, it's been difficult. This year is just a whole new level. Donald Trump and his administration has just lowered that bar. And quite honestly, Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell have been even more depressing than normal. Paul Ryan has, basically acquiesced his role as House Speaker of the House and decided to be, the president's little puppy who rolls over and gets his belly rubbed and does what he's told to. And I think the way I've coped with it is, I've decided that some of the niceties that used to happen don't need to happen in the same way. And, we really rely on being nice in the upper Midwest. But, I've done 4 town halls in Paul Ryan's district this year. If he won't listen to his own constituents, he hasn't done a public town hall in over 690 days, and he wrote a health care bill that's going to cost 20 million people their health care, someone should explain it to the people who elected him. So I've gone in and done that 4 times. So I think, just getting out there and being the truth teller and finding out how to put out those actual facts has been my best way to cope with it. But thanks for that question.
Carol in Manassas, Pennsylvania. Carol, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hi, Tom. Good afternoon, Congressman. I enjoy your show very much. I think both of you should be on all the networks every day, but that's just my opinion. I have a question for you that maybe you can explain in a way that the average person can understand. I don't get how they are working the math in this bill, this so-called health care bill, so that it will actually provide a big bonus for the very, very wealthy people. Could you explain that in a way that I could understand it? And I'll just hang up and listen.
Sure. So a part of it is, I think you've got Koch brothers and others who just want to reform the system. They want to bring it back to a complete for-profit system and where there's winners and losers, and they're the winners on the bottom line of how it works. Let me address something you mentioned. I think it's been one of the main things they're saying about this bill, and I think it's really important because the semantics are important on this, Carol, is, they say that this will lower costs. Now, this is what it means to say when you lower costs. Conceivably, if a state decides to get rid of pre-existing condition requirements or something else, or just that you can now charge people who might have a pre-existing condition more money, what they're arguing is if you charge someone with a heart disease $50,000 more for their coverage, that ultimately you'll be able to lower the price of coverage for someone who's 21 with nothing wrong with them. And that's where they're saying there's lowered costs. So, you know, arguably, you will lower the cost for a very tiny percent of people, but you'll increase the cost significantly to the point that people won't have health care for many, many more. And that's the kind of math in the bill that I look at that I think it's significant, is this kind of false narrative about a lowering cost. It lowers the cost for a very, very, very small amount of people. And for everyone else, it has potential to cost you out of the market. And then if you have to go to the emergency room, that costs the hospital and that costs others and winds up everyone else pays the bill, but you know where it should be covered. So I hope that helps out, Carol, but I think that's the math to really put the pinpoint on.
Are they still talking about with repealing that roughly 3% surcharge on capital gains to help pay for Obamacare?
Well, they're talking about the medical device fee for sure. This is one of the very interesting things, Tom, I have found. I have tried to find out what it does to some of the tax breaks that were in the original bill, and I can't even find it by doing some searches. I tried the other day because we had a press conference. Because you don't...
And you're a member of Congress.
I know, and because we don't have a CBO score... We will maybe never have all the information before people are voting on this. So I would say at minimum, there should be anyone who votes yes on this should have to pass a test and get at least 90% right on what's in the bill, because I think most people would probably get about 30% right. And that shows why trying to get this done at breakneck speed, because they've stealthily hid this to get it done for the September 30th deadline, is such a problem, why people need to call now to stop this.
Yeah. I just missed a time cue from Troy. When I'm on the road, we have to use hard brakes. Troy, how much time do we have? Oh, we got a minute and 10 seconds. Stanley, can you ask a real quick question? Stanley in Chino Valley, Arizona.
Good morning, Tom and Congressman Pocan. I do have a very quick question. Tom, you mentioned perhaps 2 months ago on the air that you and Louise preferred a Medicare plan with some sort of an additional plan with it, and my wife and I are considering dumping our present insurance. Can you tell me what that was?
Yeah, the difference is Medicare with a Medigap program, with a fill in the gaps with Medigap versus Medicare Plus. Congressman, you want to speak to those your thoughts on those two things?
I think aspirationally, we've got the Medicare for All bill out there. Right now, what we need to do is make sure that we're shoring up the Affordable Care Act. I think there are different options people can go for their unique condition. What I'm trying to focus on is how we just make sure the largest number of people are covered with affordable, accessible health care.
Yeah, okay. And to the caller's question specifically, I was just saying, personally for myself, when I went on Medicare and when I did all the research on what kind of plans were out there, it looked to me like the Medicare Plus is really just privatizing your Medicare and turning that over to one of the big insurance companies, whereas Medigap, the Medigap policies let you stay on Medicare Plus, you fills in those 20%. So that's what Louise and I chose to do. Congressman Mark Pocan taking your calls. It's Midday with Mark here on the Tom Hartman Program. Stick around. And welcome back. James, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV in Uniontown, Pennsylvania. You are on the air with Congressman Mark Pocan.
Hi, Congressman. The question I have is, or the comment is about, this morning I was listening to the Morning Joe show, and they were talking about the town hall meeting coming up Monday night that Bernie Sanders is going to have with Graham and
Cassidy.
The other guy Graham and Cassidy, and that by him having this town hall meeting with them, they will be playing into their hands because they'll be taking the focus away from the pitfall of their health care bill when Bernie's talking about Medicare for All. Would you like to comment on that?
Sure, James. So I'm not familiar with the town hall, but if it's as you're presenting, he's going to be there with Lindsey Graham and Senator Cassidy. Bernie's a very smart, savvy guy, and while he will certainly promote why we should have a Medicare for All system, I think he's going to do his very best to point out why no senator should vote for Graham Cassidy. That will hurt people in their own districts, and he'll explain the many ways that it's going to hurt people and have potential to hurt people and who really benefits from it. So, you know, for me, anything we can do to raise attention on this, and especially with someone as savvy as Bernie, I can only think it's going to turn out well.
Dave, in Hot Springs Village, Arkansas, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Dave.
Are you there?
I am.
From my old home state. I'm wondering why we can't get more people in Congress on this progressive caucus list. Last I checked, there's a total of 75 and only one senator. Are we making some efforts in that area?
Sure, Dave. No, great question. I mean, first of all, this is a high number for us as far as members, especially in the House. The Senate, we never really had members previously, and only because when Bernie went to the Senate, he stayed a member. I don't think there's been a lot of efforts to increase Senate membership, but on the House side, you know, I'll be real honest, Dave, we're actually running into a different problem, is that it's pretty fashionable right now to be a progressive, and there have been some members who I would argue's voting records maybe aren't the most progressive, who are interested in becoming members to maybe avoid primary challenges or try to maybe distort their records a little bit. And, you know, I think our bigger dilemma we have is we want to make sure the Progressive Caucus stands for something, that when we put a bill out there that our members are sponsoring it and that we're having a unified voice. So we are at a high with 75 members, which is the largest values-based caucus, bigger than the New Dems or certainly bigger than the Blue Dogs. But we're actually starting to run into a little bit of a different dilemma, which is, do you just want to be, you know, if you want to be 130 members, you could, but you may not stand for anything anymore. And I think we actually are having this internal conversation.
That's, you know, it's kind of an embarrassment of riches. That's great. How, by the way, the one of the things that I think is one of the most important things that the Congressional Progressive Caucus does every year or every 2 years is submit a budget. And, well, we're running out of time. And welcome back. Congressman Mark Pocan on the line taking your calls. And Joe in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Joe, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hi, Tom and Congressman. My original thing was to call it about CHIP because I was a little worried about 9 million kids are at risk there, plus mothers. And I... what was going on, you gave sort of an answer, so we'll just have to wait on that and hope that works out. But I do have another thing for you. Axios has an article called Analysis: State Senate's Health Care Costs Could Top $4 trillion. Cuts. I'm sorry, not cuts. And within that article, they have a link to Avalair Health Consulting. And that was... funded by the Center for American Progress. And it goes into quite some detail on who's going to win, who's going to lose. Do you have any comment on that?
Yeah,
as
you know, Joe, so
I haven't seen
that particular study, but, you know, clearly I think we all know that healthcare costs are something that we have to be controlling. And a big part of the Affordable Care Act was controlling many of the costs. I think the pharmaceutical industry was probably the most brazen in being the first major violators of that. But if you go back to the old system, you will have costs going up, and I guarantee everyone's rates are going to go up. If you start having it so that people have to go to emergency rooms and don't have coverage, someone's got to pay for that, and that falls on the hospitals, and that's going to fall on costs. You're going to have this huge escalation. Once again, it's just basic economics 101. So, you know, I think while some people are trying to say that this is going to reduce the price of premiums, again, I think I tried to explain that that's going to be for a very, very small amount of people. Maybe if you're young and healthy, you'll pay less. But for anyone who actually needs health care, who has any pre-existing condition, it could very likely price you out of the market.
Yeah, and the study he was referring to, we talked about yesterday on the program, showed that California and New York is basically the blue Democratic states that implemented a full Medicaid expansion will lose billions, tens of billions of dollars. And states like Texas in particular was one of the big winners, will gain billions of dollars. Because basically what this bill does is, the red states will begin accepting federal money, and they're going to cut back the federal money overall to all the states, which would be all the blue states that took those expansions. That's
And that's absolutely correct. What will happen also, that's, again, a private-funded study that's trying to say states like Wisconsin, actually, because Scott Walker didn't expand Medicaid, will see a benefit actuarially, although not a benefit to the people. Mm-hmm. But then we've seen other studies saying that actually it'll still cost Wisconsin money. So that's part of why we need a CBO score, because a privately paid study by someone who has an interest in this is probably not the best study for us to be voting on a complete reform of one-sixth of the national economy.
Dick in Billings, Montana. Hey, Dick, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Good morning. How are you? Let me take you off speakerphone. Good. So a question is, if to go down the road towards single payer, shouldn't we get rid of the business deduction for health care costs?
Dick, I don't know if, putting a squeeze on businesses who are providing health insurance is going to get us closer to single payer. I think ultimately that might cost some businesses from providing health insurance, and then that will hurt people who are out there not having policies. I think what we do is it aspirationally. If people are tired of a ongoing, never-ending debate on health care, and they know someone close to them who's got a pre-existing condition or, one of the essential health benefits, a mental health coverage or something else they could lose, this doesn't make sense that we have this ongoing fight and people don't know literally from month to month, year to year, whether or not they have health insurance. I think that's what Barack Obama brought up this past week, is that, when you have a never-ending changes to health care, there's no continuity whatsoever, and that alone is a strong argument. And previously, Tom and I have talked about why it's advantageous to businesses to have a single-payer system, because they could save money. Cars alone, they say the price of steel in an American car is less than the health insurance cost. So there's a lot of other ways I think we could promote single-payer without doing anything that might have any damage potentially.
Congressman, in the last little less than a minute of this hour, what should we be watching in the upcoming week here?
I think we should watch what deals they try to cut in order to do this health care. I know there's a report about exempting Alaska from this, allowing them to still have the Affordable Care Act to try to get Murkowski. We have to watch what deals they'll cut, how desperate they are to get this done by September 30th, and then put a lot of pressure on people to not accept those deals.
Right, and keep and people should continue to call their members of Congress and basically all of these, shall we say, vulnerable Republicans or swingable Republicans, Collins, Murkowski.
Call your members of Congress and then work with Indivisible, where they can hook you up into people's districts to convince someone maybe in Oklahoma to call their legislator in Oklahoma. If you live in a district where your member of Congress and senators maybe are supporting you, you can still be impactful and get calls delivered to people who need to get the calls. But Indivisible is one of those groups doing that.
That's great. Congressman Pocan, thanks so much for being with us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Hey, are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. And their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through that site within one day. No juggling emails or calls to your office. You simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place, right on your computer, with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, you, my listeners, can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Hartman. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Hartman. One more time to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com /Hartman. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you live from Portland, Oregon. And the whole situation around Equifax and this hack and all this kind of stuff raises some really, really big issues. And the main one is the increasing tendency on the part of business model of large corporations to turn you and me into the product and then, in many cases, sell it to us, you know, sell ourselves to back to us, as it were. And, you know, I mean, you see this increasingly if you go on, you know, if you go on a search engine and you look for something and then suddenly you start seeing ads for that, or even if you get an email about something and you start seeing ads for it, if you're using, you know, one of the email services from one of the companies that has a search engine. I mean, this is not limited to Google. This is happening with some of the other ones as well. But the credit thing is a particularly interesting one. I remember back in the 1970s, I started Terry O'Connor, my business partner, and I started a company, the Woodley Herber Company, and then we had an ad agency called Terry Graphics. This was in 72. And we wanted to be able to buy equipment. We ultimately had it was an herbal tea company, and we ultimately had 18 employees in a full factory in Okemos, Michigan, in the old R.E. Olds mansion, which at that point was just kind of a falling down giant old house, but it worked fine for us. And in order to buy equipment, you know, leasing it, that sort of thing, you had to have good credit. And the way that you had good credit back in the 70s, keep in mind, again, this was before the Reagan era of, you know, massive deregulation of banking and things. Pretty much everything was done through Dun & Bradstreet, D&B. And so you call up a company and say, hey, I'd like to get a copy machine, or, you know, we need a mixing contraption, you know, for the herbs or whatever. And so, you know, we'd like to, you know, lease a $5,000 piece of equipment or whatever. And they would say, well, what's your D&B number? And you'd say, oh, it's 23-149722 or whatever. And they would immediately look it up because you gave them your number. And now that they have your number and they have your permission, they would contact Dun & Bradstreet and say, you know, what's this guy's credit history or what's the company's credit history? And these were, you know, essentially sole proprietorships and partnerships. So it was our personal stuff as well as our business stuff. And D&B would give you a rating, and they would convey that rating to people. And that seems like the way it should be, right? You know, in fact, for us to get that D&B number, we had to be in business over, as I recall, a year, maybe it was 2 years, and we had to do a certain level of business. And I mean, it was... I went through this myself personally. This is a personal experience. Had to contact Dun & Bradstreet, say we would like to have you rate our credit. We would like to be rated by Dun & Bradstreet. I don't recall if we paid a fee for it or not. My recollection vaguely is that there was an application fee to be rated by Dun & Bradstreet. You know, I'm not sure exactly where the money flowed on that. I think also when companies ask them for my credit information, once I gave them my number, they would also have to pay D&B. So, you know, there was a way to make money here. But what has happened now with Experian and Equifax and Trans, whatever it is, the third company, Transamerica, I think, with these three giant rating companies, credit rating companies, is they have just reached out to all of the, you know, the financial agencies, the credit card companies, the banks, and everybody else, the mortgage companies, and gotten all our information without our saying, please do it, without our asking for it, without our giving them permission to do it. They have acquired all this information, and not all of it is publicly available. This isn't like, you know, compiling voter records where that information is publicly available. You know, you have to... If somebody wants to know, you know, my activity with my bank or with my, you know, whatever it may be, my mortgage or whatever, you know, they have to contact my banker and get that information. And I've never had a credit card, you know, a credit reporting company contact me, call me, email me or anything and say, you know, may we have your permission to to know, you know, what's in your checking account or what your credit card line of credit is or whatever. You know, it's they don't ask you for that permission. They simply go out and get your information, and then they sell your information. And it's a big business. And we are the product. And we never consented to this. And if you don't want them to pass your information out to people or actually sell your information to people, if you don't want them to, you have to do what's called a credit freeze, and you have to pay them to freeze your credit. And then it's only good for, you know, it depends on how long you pay for, but typically at the most 1 year. You know, you can't call up one of these companies and say, you know, I'd just like to go off the grid. You know, I'm at a point in my life where, you know, I'm not using credit, or what I'm using right now is just fine. My mortgage is there. My credit cards are there. Everything is solid. Just erase me from your records. You can't do that. And why the heck not? So I think that there's a really strong case to be made for us to re-examine the entire business model of American citizens being the product that is being sold. Whether it is Facebook looking at all of every like you've ever liked and concluding that you have a preference for vegetarian food, and you like pictures of rainbows, and you tend to follow Democratic politicians, and I mean they've got this down to they can literally say, you know, people who are more likely to be depressed, people who are more likely to the latest scandal with Facebook was somebody said, hey, I want to place an ad that goes to people who hate Jews. And they were like, sure, here's a list. Give us the money, we'll put the ad there. Say, what? Hate Jews? Really? This actually happened just last week. So you've got, you know, Facebook is selling us. Google is selling us. Microsoft, you know, the Bing search engine, they're selling us. The big three credit agencies and a bunch of smaller ones are selling us. You can bet your bottom dollar that your bank is selling you. If you have credit cards with gas companies, gasoline companies, or with department stores, things like that, they're selling your information. We have become the product. And, you know, I realize that the Fourth Amendment, you know, which guarantees our right to privacy, our person's papers and effects and residence. I realize that the Fourth Amendment is a protection of a right to privacy being, you know, to prevent that right to privacy from being violated by the government. The Fourth Amendment does not give you the right not to have your privacy violated. It does not say that you can be protected from privacy violations by private corporations, only by government. But law can be made and has been made in the past and unmade and made and unmade that does provide you with privacy protections. And I think this whole Experian hack, and now, you know, the criminal investigation into it and everything, and the whole media thing about it is, you know, how's it going to affect the company, or was there an executive who behaved criminally? Nobody's even asking the question, is this whole business model idea of selling us, you and me, we are the product that are being sold to everybody from you know, politicians to soap manufacturers. Shouldn't there be some regulation of that? Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. The breaking news is that John McCain has just come out and said no to the Graham Cassidy, Heller-Johnson bill. And I think it's important to keep the Heller-Johnson in there, because Dean Heller of Nevada and Ron Johnson of Wisconsin are both running for re-election, and they both put their names on this bill. It's Lindsey Graham, that's the whole thing, right? Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, and then, you know, Johnson and whatnot. And this Now that McCain has said no, and just a few hours ago, Susan Collins on television said she's inclined to vote no, which, you know, Susan Collins is a rather underspoken or understated person, right? She's a soft-spoken, she's a very competent and tough legislator, a statesperson, not one I always agree with, but probably one of the few left in the Republican Party. So you got Rand Paul, who opposes it because it doesn't just destroy all health care for everybody. Rand Paul doesn't think that anybody in America should have health care if the government makes it better or provides it. He thinks that everyone should have to, quote, rely on themselves. You know, that's the libertarian religion, right? I mean, that's the religion that he was born into, and it's the religion that he's continuing to follow. So you've got him. He hates it from the right. And now Susan Collins and John McCain, if that holds, this bill is not going to pass. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't continue to call, because we don't have a definite no from Susan Collins. Maybe the thing to do would be to tweet Susan Collins and John McCain and say, thank you for opposing this disaster of a piece of legislation. You know, thank you for that. I wanted to talk about North Korea a little bit, too, and then I'll pick up your calls. It being Anything Goes Friday. But the North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un, issued a statement in response to Donald Trump's UN speech in which he called him Rocket Man and said that he was on a suicide mission. I talked about this, I think it was day before yesterday, at some length about the idea that North Korea is not evangelical, whereas the old Soviet communists were aggressively evangelical, you know, turned the entire world into us. Nazism, you know, was extremely evangelical. The Americanism is extremely evangelical. Many of these, you know, and this is just, you know, political evangelism. But North Korea has basically just been saying, you know, leave us alone and let us be a functioning country. So, you know, there is one school of thought that says that Kim is a crazy man who wants to start a war. I don't believe that. I don't subscribe to that. I mean, why would he want to do that? He's living a life of luxury. He's got all his wealth and power. He doesn't want his country to be leveled. The destruction of North Korea during the Korean War in the around 1950 was unbelievable. I mean, it was just Pyongyang, the capital city, was more than 90% destroyed. It was just extraordinary. And he doesn't want to go back to that. He doesn't want that. What he's trying to do is prevent his country from being Iraq. You know, this all goes back to George W. Bush and that stupid speech that David Frum wrote for him, in which he called North Korea, Iran, and Iraq the axis of evil. And, you know, Iraq, Saddam Hussein said, hey, I'm not evil. Bring in your inspectors. Send in Hans Blix. Everything's fine. I got no weapons of mass destruction. It's all good. We're going to be a nice neighbor. And, you know, of course, we killed him. And so Iran and North Korea, looking at that, said, well, wait a minute. We're not going to let that happen to us. And we got to get a nuke. And so we've got now this deal with Iran to freeze their nuke, and North Korea, of course, is building their nuke. But I think it's important that we actually listen to what Kim Jong-un has to say. And I realize that kind of thoughtful analysis of what's going on in the world is not popular generally in American journalism or American popular media, that it's people would much rather make fun of Kim or ridicule him or whatever. But there's some serious stuff here. And so I just wanted to share with you the actual speech that Kim Jong-un wrote or spoke. This is, just so you know, right? Because the media is not going to tell you. He said, the speech made by the U.S. president in his maiden address on the U.N. arena, in the prevailing serious circumstances in which the situation in the Korean Peninsula has been rendered tense as never before and is inching closer to a touch-and-go state, is arousing worldwide concern. shaping the general idea of what he would say, I expected, now keep in mind, this is Kim Jong-un talking about Donald Trump's speech at the UN, shaping the general idea of what he would say, I expected he would make stereotyped prepared remarks a little different from what he used to utter in his office on the spur of the moment as he had to speak on the world's biggest official diplomatic stage. But far from making remarks of any persuasive power that could be viewed to be helpful by diffusing tension, he made unprecedented, rude nonsense no one has ever heard from any of his predecessors. A frightened dog barks louder. I would like to advise Trump to exercise prudence in selecting words and to be considerate of whom he speaks to when making a speech in front of the world. See, as I keep saying, what they want is safety and respect, essentially. Back to Kim. Back to what Kim had to say. The mentally deranged behavior of the U.S. president openly expressing on the U.N. arena the unethical will to, quote, totally destroy a sovereign state, beyond the boundary of threats of regime change or overturn of social system, makes even those with normal thinking faculty think about discretion and composure. His remarks remind me of such words as political layman and political heretic, which were in vogue in reference to Trump during his presidential election campaign. After taking office, though, Trump has rendered the world restless through threats and blackmail against all countries of the world. He is unfit to hold the prerogative of supreme command of a country, and he is surely a rogue and a gangster, fond of playing with fire rather than a politician. His remarks, which describe the U.S. option through straightforward expression of his will, have convinced me, rather than frightening or stopping me, that the path I chose is correct and that it is the one I will have to follow to the last. Now that Trump has denied the existence of and insulted me and my country, keep in mind, Trump did not say Kim Jong-un, he said Rocket Man. Now that Trump has denied the existence of and insulted me and my country in front of the eyes of the world and made the most ferocious declaration of a war in history, that he would destroy the DPRK, North Korea, we will consider with seriousness exercising of a corresponding highest level of hardline countermeasure, the highest level of hardline countermeasure in history. Action is the best option in treating a dotard who, hard of hearing, is uttering only what he wants to say. As a man representing North Korea and on behalf of the dignity and honor of my state and people and of my own, I will make the man holding the prerogative of the supreme command of the U.S. pay dearly for his speech calling for totally destroying my country. This is not a rhetorical expression loved by Trump. I am now thinking hard about what response he could have expected when he allowed such eccentric words to trip off his tongue. Whatever Trump might have expected, he will face results beyond his expectation. I will surely and definitely tame the mentally deranged U.S. dotard with fire.
Coming up tomorrow, we'll have the latest news and information from Wall Street and Main Street, all points in between, plus best of the rest of the news. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. Get out there, show up, participate, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.